It's one thing of income, but it's another thing of providing the best life for your wife and kids. And, you know, your wife wants to go on a trip or she wants to buy a car and she understands that you can't, but you see that she wants that. And, you know, it's hard just to shake that off. Like, oh, I'm doing my best. We'll get there someday. It's hard to have true fulfillment and feel like you're giving the best life possible when you can't provide the things that you want to provide them. And that's a, like you said, like emotionally and mentally, that's a really hard thing to swallow for me as a man. I'm sure for a lot of men, that would be a really hard thing to swallow and just say, you know, keep moving forward and feel like you're fulfilling your obligations as being, you know, the best leader for your household. I mean, that's real, dude.
My name is Johnny Elsasser, and I am a former Special Operations U.S. Army Ranger and Tactical Commander to the U.S. Ambassador's Protective Detail. I have seen the struggle even the most hardened men have faced when they combat their inner demons, and I am here to shine a light on those struggles to show that no man is exempt from adversity and internal pain. Men from all walks of life share their stories of hardship, darkness, and perseverance so that every man knows that whatever he is going through, he is not alone. Evolution for Men begins now. Our guest today is Elliot Schwartz, a dear friend of mine, as we embark on episode 400 of The Art of Masculinity. Elliot and I are good friends from many, many years ago, and he's been on the show before, but today we're diving into some of the constructs of society today, not only of how men are behaving and some of the struggles that men are having, but also we're getting into some of the things that we can do as men to look at ourselves and maybe start to do things that create wealth on the side of our 9-to-5s, on the side of our obligations. So this was such a fun episode. I'm so honored to still be around after 400 episodes with you guys. And this one is such a fun one. It's a jam sesh between a brother, and it's something where I think you guys are going to get a lot of value from. So enjoy this episode. Thank you so much for sticking with us for 400, and I'll see y'all around the corner. All right, everyone. Welcome back to The Art of Masculinity. We got my boy, Elliot Schwartz, on with us today. For those of you that don't know him, he's been on the show before, a dear friend of mine. Definitely don't see him in person enough because he lives in that dirty little Arizona town, but
the Dust Bowl.
What's going on, brother?
Not much, man. Dude, I'm pumped to be here, and you just let me know it's your 400th episode, so I'm freaking pumped to hit the milestone episode. So, hey, I mean, I guess I'm pretty important to you.
Dude, yeah, you absolutely are, and it worked out that you're my 400th because, I couldn't imagine having anybody better on with me. One, to jam out, and two, to hit this milestone. That's a lot. If you would have asked me back in, I think it was 2018 when I started, like, hey, man, you're going to be at 400 episodes, I would have laughed in your face. Dude, 400 episodes. Holy crap. I can't even imagine that we're already here. It's wild.
Congrats, man. That takes a lot. Consistency and dedication. That's pretty huge. I'm pumped to be a part of your community and on this podcast and a freaking milestone like 400. That's what an honor, man. Pumped to be here.
It's super dope. Appreciate it, brother. I'm super happy to have you on. Now you have Jacked and Happy, which I love the title of that podcast. You guys are still rocking and rolling, right?
I am. And I'm actually I'm rebranding it to Short-Term Gains. So I haven't relaunched it yet, but that's going to be more around like the Airbnb space, which is kind of what I'm focused on these days. And I just wanted to be like niche down a little bit, just let people know, like, it'll cover, you know, everything from, you know, a lot of different subjects, but I just wanted to niche down to, you know, get investors on and people who are rocking Airbnbs and help people who are getting started and kind of learn more about that space.
Ooh, this is going to be good for a conversation on here. I think a lot of listeners just like they perked up. So when you do the rebranding, is it do you carry all your subscribers or like, does it affect you? Like, how does that work with rebranding? I don't even know.
Yeah, it's literally you just like update your title and your picture and you keep rocking and rolling. So
really, that's it, huh? Like I thought for some reason I talked to Chris a long time ago and he was like, he said it was like a whole thing. Maybe they've changed it now, but I thought it was like a whole thing where it kind of like,
it could be. I So that's just from my understanding of the girl who's running mine. She's like, oh yeah, it'll be easy. We just flip. So we just flip the switch, but maybe there's a better way to do it. I'll talk to Chris. I'm playing pickleball with him tomorrow. So if there's a hack to switch it and make sure all your subscribers knows it's still you or something, you know?
That's cool. Dude, I got into pickleball. I've been like addicted, dude. It's been bad, actually. I've missed maybe like 4 or 5 days in like 3 months. That's it.
Dude, I just saw something that a study that came out that racket sports, people who play racket sports live longer than anybody else. Isn't that crazy?
Any other athlete? Shit.
Has something to do with your brain and cognitive function and like tracking the ball and stuff. So it was really interesting. So pickleball is a biohack, not just fun.
I also only have about 2 brain cells. So if I can keep those things operating really well, then at high peak function, like I'm good, you know?
That's 100% more than me, dope. Dude. Congrats.
That's dope. Oh, dude, that's awesome. Yeah, let them know I said what's up. Let's dive into a little bit on the Airbnb stuff. So last time you were on the show, I don't think you had started your business yet. And now you have like high-end Airbnbs. You got your, I believe it's the first one that's rocking and rolling out in Arizona right now. Not fully on the market yet, but it's getting all put together and it's going to be so sick. But let's talk a little bit about this because it is a big industry right now, and especially for people who are doing a full-time job. I think we're seeing a lot of people kind of jump into this arena on the side. So let's jump into talking about that because I think people would be, I'm super interested in it. So they get to be interested in it.
Yeah. Well, there's actually a lot of like negative press on Airbnbs right now. And Phoenix is, I mean, it definitely is not like what it used to be where you could just put something up and it was hot and it was going to be successful. Yeah. It takes like an actual marketing plan and intentionality behind being a good host and finding niches and understanding the market and what's going on. It was interesting jumping into the space. I mean, we have a cabin up north that does well and personally, and then, you know, we're doing this retreat space. So it's, you know, it's a little bit bigger, 7-bed, 9-bath, and just looking at all the stats and getting with property managers and understanding like what's working for them. Cause this guy in the area is hosts, I think like close to 2,000 homes in the area. And So getting his perspective of like, hey, what's working, what's not out there. And he definitely said the luxury space is his best performing market. And just because when you look at the stats around the Phoenix area, I was telling you this a little bit before, but there's only 4% of homes on Airbnb are 5 bedrooms or more. So when you're looking at, you know, niches and positions to be in, you know, we really love that space. And then for me, you know, our communities, like your wife hosts masterminds, you know, so does mine and a lot of our friends host masterminds. And so to be able to control some of the occupants that are going in there just made a lot of sense to me. So it's going to be a retreat space. And then, you know, we'll put it on Airbnb to fill the gaps for personal residential travel. But I like to control my own destiny and have a unique perspective on something different. And this is more of a retreat space, you know, but then, you know, backed up by the Airbnb space. But I think just Airbnb in general, there are emerging markets all over the country. And if you look at Airbnb stock, it's thriving. More people are staying at Airbnb. The demand is up. So it's just looking in certain areas and make sure you're not getting into a saturated market. You know, for a 3-bed, 2-bath in Phoenix, I would say Scottsdale, it's going to be tough because there's a lot of them. Unless you have like a niche, like it's a bachelorette house or a theme, or, you know, you're doing something different out there. I mean, AirDNA is a really powerful tool if you're looking to get into the space of, it'll show you like how houses are doing, the rents. You can kind of take a look at your expenses and you just want to make sure that, you know, your projections cover the overhead. It's just really important to, I think now, just to be intentional with the house you're doing, the area, understanding what other people are getting for rent and the true costs behind it to make sure it's a good investment. But I absolutely, you know, I think there's plenty of opportunity in the Airbnb space, and there will be for some time, because I mean, you just look at the difference between a hotel and an Airbnb space. I mean, if me, you and Jock and, you know, our buddies are getting together, it kind of sucks to like go back to your separate rooms and not have a space to cook and watch TV or play poker. And, you know, there's something about the community aspect of an Airbnb and being in a house together that is just different than a hotel. So, and the hotels have their space and place and time, and they'll always will, obviously, but I think Airbnb is here to stay. And I think that I think when you're looking for community and wanting to get together for a unique experience, I think there's nothing like staying in a house and having that intentional space with people.
Oh, I agree, dude. I run my men's events, and you know, we're doing one in Kodiak this summer in August, and there's no houses available. I wish I could get a big house available with multiple rooms, because it isn't like ideal to put everybody in a hotel, because you get separation, and kind of the whole point of those atmospheres are to get connected with the boys, right? Like to have that, you know. God, how many times have you and I been somewhere and have just great conversations in the morning over coffee, right? Just waking up and you're sitting there for like an hour, or with your buddy, you've been on a lot of guys' trips, like in the mountains and stuff. When you guys are just sitting there with a coffee at like, you know, 8 a.m. or something, you get lost in like an hour, like just sitting there having a great conversation. Those are the bonding moments you kind of miss.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, man. And it's just like fun, you know, it's like teamwork. Everyone's cleaning up the house and someone cooks breakfast. It's just like, it's cool. It's just cool to see people's different roles and how you like contribute to the group. And it's just, I don't know. I just love it.
Yeah, it's so dope. So you said it was called, what'd you call it? AirDNA?
AirDNA, yeah. It's
I never even knew
it's basically
about this.
It's just an analytic program where it's a subscription. I think it's like 50 or 70 bucks a month or something like that. But yeah, you can look all across the country, look at cities. It'll show you, what people are getting for rent. And, you know, it just really helps you make informed decisions around, hey, if I get, 15 days rent, is it going to cover my mortgage? Which is, tough in today's age with interest rates and the housing prices. So
yeah,
it takes a sophisticated amount of information to make a good decision. Where before, I feel like, at 3% interest, you could pretty much buy anywhere and it would make sense. When you run the numbers, but 8%, like you have to be intentional and know your numbers, because you could be upside down on monthly cash flow in a hurry if you're not making a good decision.
Oh yeah, dude. Yeah. My good friends just, they're buying their home in Dallas, and they were getting like, I think it was like 6.75% is what they're getting quoted right now. And I was like, dang, bro, that's rough. That's a rough kind of buy-in. Now, obviously you refi when the economy is better, but you still got to eat that for potentially a year or two.
Yeah. I mean, if we're lucky, there's no crystal ball, And yeah. I had a friend freaking just get like a 9-point-something on his house. They're two entrepreneurs and they bought a house and,
whoa.
And, I think it's actually over 10. And because, they were kind of in a hurry to move and, it's like, they don't have W-2. Yeah. They're showing, their business and you know how it is. You're not trying to pay a ton of taxes. So sometimes you try to like move, show as little income as you can through expenses and stuff, running it through the business. And that's the only way they could get this loan. So,
dang. Yeah. Isn't it so funny that business owners who can like and it's not to down talk W-2s. I was a W-2 my whole life, but like business owners who put to shame a W-2 income by far have a harder time getting lent money by our institutions than a W-2 who makes a fraction of what those business owners make. And the only thing I can come up with, and maybe it's correct or maybe it's not, this industry far better than I do, but it's like they almost want you to fail. And they know if you make a limited amount of income, there's a chance that you're going to fail and you're going to pay interest or higher levels of interest or pay missed payment back pays or whatever. And so it's like, it's almost like they just, they're like, oh, cool. Yeah, we'll loan to you, bro. But the guys that we know could pay this off every month, we don't want to give them the money.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I feel like there probably is like, a increased amount of risk with small business. I mean, it's hard, but some of these business, like this guy's had a successful business for, 6-7 years of making close to $1 million revenue. And like you said, like they're as stable as you can be. I mean, a W-2 is, you could be fired, let go is, just like anybody else. And I don't know, it's almost like they make it hard. Like I think the government doesn't want us to be independent of them. And so, a small business who owns their own money and it's like, oh, how can we make this a little bit tougher to be truly independent from us? So I don't know. Who knows?
Well, we saw a lot of that during the pandemic. They obviously don't want us to be independent. They want to have that control over everything. But the financial institutions, like it just, you know, it's almost like they know the people that are going to have a harder time paying them back, and they'll keep lending money. They'll lend them credit cards. They'll lend them easily, give them mortgages and car loans. And then, but as soon as you come in with a private ownership or you're a sole proprietor or LLC and you're running your own business, as soon as you come in that way, even if you show 7 years of consistent revenue, they're like, nope, we're going to make this difficult as all hell. It's fucking wild. Yeah. Dude, just wild.
You're 100% spot on with that.
Like I get it. And like, I'm just, because I can say all this because I saw it, you know. I was with my wife's business been highly sustainable for a decade, and you can see all this stuff. And I'm sitting here, a measly little government employee, and they're wanting to loan me. It's an easier time for us to get a loan, like our RV and stuff. It was an easier time for us to get a loan with my W-2 than it was trying to just use her income as a business owner. It's the absolutely weirdest things. It's counterintuitive to what we would think a government looking out for their people would do, you know?
Oh, totally. And same thing with like student loans. They will freaking give you a $200,000 student loan in a blink of an eye, but to try to go get $50,000 to start a business is like substantially harder, which is where you're actually going to be making money to pay it off. So it's just like, it's crazy, man.
Yeah. They're like, hey man, like, you know, you want to start a business. We can see that, like, you know, you've got the ability to run the business. We see the business plan. Oh, but your credit score is not absolutely perfect. So no, we're not going to lend it. And you're like, bro, what? Are you kidding me? Like, this is far more, you have a higher chance of getting this back far faster than you do somebody. And maybe that's why they don't want it back early. They want it back late so they can collect more interest, right? So it's kind of like the philosophy behind it.
But you want a basket weaving degree for $200,000 at a liberal arts school? Absolutely. Here's 200K. 17-year-old who you don't know
what to pay it back.
You don't know what you're doing for future. Yeah. Here you go. Enjoy.
We don't know how you'll pay this back. We don't know who's buying basket weaving, but you know what? We'll give you this.
Yeah.
Oh,
great business plan. Dude. Here you go.
It's so fucked up, man. It's so ass backwards in the way that we operate. Like you almost like the institutions and even the government, but the institutions and the government, you would think honestly, and just being objective, you would honestly think that they're like, hey, let's try to help people out as much as possible. But I just see, let's help people. Let's make people, like the philosophy I see them have is like, let's make people believe we're helping them, but let's be fucking them behind the scenes, because we know that that's going to be how we just get richer. And it's just, oh,
dude, it's the Matrix, right? So it's like it's ways to enslave people and just enough like, you know, debt to income where it's hard to look outside of, hey, if I quit my job, oh my gosh, I have three different loans that I have to pay off. It's really difficult to like see a pathway to starting your own business and still making those payments. It's like, it's a lot easier, more comfortable to keep a $80,000 to $130,000 job where you can make all your payments, but are you really getting ahead? You know, so it's such a way to just keep people their nose to the grindstone, head down, not thinking big, not really pursuing the true capabilities and the, you know, limit for what they can achieve. And it takes a lot and that's why, like, dude, I love your community. I love your podcast. I love everything you're doing, because you're showing people and you're giving people opportunities to become the biggest version of themselves and see a pathway to getting and achieving their biggest and truest self. And it's hard to do that when you have blinders on, just trying to survive. So it takes something to overcome that jump to really trying to achieve your true potential.
Well, and yeah, dude, it just it's depressing. It's depressing when you barely have enough paycheck to get to the end of the month, right? Like, I mean, I can think about the times that I have not made a lot of money and was able, you know, and I was having credit cards, you know, I opened credit cards and used them and wasn't super savvy in those things. And then all of a sudden I'd get to the end of the month and it's like, hey, you want to go do something? Well, I can't do anything except maybe go to the bar for a couple hours and have some drinks because we can't go on a trip because I don't have the money to go do that. And it's depressing when you live that way. And the unfortunate part is because the way the system works with all the allotment of debt is that's how most people are living. And it's depressing. And especially for men who are supposed to be the breadwinners, like that's depressing, man. Like that is a depressing state to live in. And we wonder why men are really struggling. You're like, well, bro, that's just one of the compounding issues. It's like they're also broke as fuck. And like they have enjoyment. They're like, yeah, I'd love to take my family and, you know, go somewhere for a week or do this. And it's like, but one, I can't take the time off because I need that money to be able to pay the bills I have. And number two, I barely make enough to pay the bills. So it's like, I can't do any of these things. You just see that depression kind of,
a good point. As men, we want to provide for families and we want the best lives for wives and kids. And you're busting your butt to make that happen and you're barely hanging on. I mean, that is depressing. And that can really eat at a man's self-worth to, you know, it's one thing of income, but it's another thing of providing the best life for your wife and kids. And, you know, your wife wants to go on a trip or she wants to buy a car and she understands that you can't, but you see that she wants that. And, you know, it's hard just to shake that off. Like, oh, I'm doing my best. We'll get there someday. It's hard to have true fulfillment and feel like you're giving the best life possible when you can't provide the things that you want to provide them. And that's emotionally and mentally, that's a really hard thing to swallow for me as a man. I'm sure for a lot of men, that would be a really hard thing to swallow and just say, you know, keep moving forward and feel like you're fulfilling your obligations as being, you know, the best leader for your household. I mean, that's real, dude.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure so many guys and people in general, but I think as a man, especially when it comes to the roles that men are kind of predisposed to, it's depressing. And I think that causes that deterioration of confidence. They don't show up as fathers. They don't show up as husbands. They don't show up as even just good men for themselves. And then you just see that deterioration of masculinity across the board. I think that's, you know, the Western world has probably the largest struggle in this. And we are also probably the one that's in the most debt.
Yeah, for sure. I think we are.
Yeah, because we operate our systems off this. Like we were just talking about, we operate a debt-based system. Like your credit score is based upon how much debt you have out and then your regularity of paying that off or paying it down, right? And they want you to have debt. Like they want you to have more money available to you from creditors, which is so fucked up. Like they want you to have that. Like that should give you your first cue of like, huh, that doesn't necessarily seem right that you want me to have a lot of money to be able to be loaned out to me that I have to pay back. That seems a little fucked up.
It's true, man.
What do you think about this social credit score shit?
I hate it. It's just a way to control people and it's a way to dictate behavior, you know? And it's just like when you're in a job and you're being forced a vaccination that you don't believe in or you don't need and, you know, you're getting punished because you're thinking for yourself and you're acting independently. And I feel like it's a really dangerous path to have agendas of behavior for people and being punished for not following those behaviors. I mean, you know, carbon footprint, driving, gas usage, all these different things that, you know, if you drive a truck and you're a construction worker and all of a sudden you're independent and there's a gas limit or a, you know, a mileage limit because your gas only gets, you know, 14 miles a gallon. So now you can, hey, you're only allowed 200 miles a week or 500 miles a week. And now you can't get lending and all these different aspects. It's a very slippery, dangerous slope to make sure that people are just lining up for the government's agenda. And, you know, the government gets a lot of things wrong. So you're making people act in a way that they believe is right, but you don't believe that. And now it's affecting your livelihood and your family. And it's just a very, very dangerous slope.
Well, I think it's like, it's just another method of control, right? Like they forced you, they forced us, and people can say, well, everything's a choice, but in all reality, they groomed us as a society for decades to be a debt-based economy, right? Like you can, our cars are far more expensive than they are in other countries. But in America, you essentially almost have to drive a car unless you're in an actual big city with public transportation, right? So you essentially kind of, majority of Americans have to have a car. But now that's another, that is part of the debt-based system because you typically have to get a loan because you're looking at cars that are relatively pretty expensive now. You're looking at homes that have gone astronomically higher than what they used to be back in the day. You know, I saw something where it was like a two-bedroom house or something like that was like $5,000 back in the day. And now it's like you get that same house and it's $500,000 type thing.
Yeah.
But yep. You've been conditioned, we've been conditioned from generation to generation to be this debt-based society. So people know it, right? Like we know it. We understand it. Now, for those of us that really, really deeply understand it, we don't necessarily like it. And it's not to say anybody else is dumber. They just maybe not have taken the time to really understand the game that they're involved in. But now you get this ESG too, which now is like an overlaying control piece to, or the social credit system, you're getting an overlaying control piece to the debt base, right? Because now the debt has a threshold, has a barrier of what is the social compliance that you have? What's your level of social compliance? And now we're going to release debt based on the social compliance. It's like, how do you become communist real quick? And you're like, yeah, this is how you do it. This is how you do it.
Yeah, that's 100. Well, and I just saw like, I think it's either Europe or Canada somewhere that you can go to jail for up to 15 years for hate speech. You know, that's who determines what hate speech is. And here, you know, our freedom of speech is, you know, the number one backbone of our country and being able to express ourselves. And I think I heard somebody say this, but like the importance of free speech isn't for, you know, the easy conversations. It's for the things that you don't want to hear and that you don't agree with. That's why it's protected, because you can say things that are controversial and against the grain and difficult for some people to swallow, but it's really important for different ideas to be out there and for people to be able to express things that other people may not want to hear and agree with. And that's the importance of free speech. And so when you start dictating behavior of your social credit score and how you can function in society, you are crippling people's free speech. And I just think it's, like you said, it's a clear pathway to communism.
Yeah, dude. And in that free speech, yeah, I just heard that too. I've heard it before, but it was a dude, something O'Neill, that's on Joe Rogan's podcast recently. And he said that almost, you know, same exact way. Was that like, you know, when you're stifling that free speech, or what free speech's purpose is not to be this oh, like rainbows and unicorn society. Free speech is supposed to be like, how do we have these tough conversations? But also the free speech is for, and I loved this part of what he said, I hadn't heard this before, but it's for other people to hear it, right? Because then you can actually make an informed and educated and critical thinking style decision, right? So you actually are allowing yourself to have freedom to make that decision. If you hear the same thing all the time, you don't have the ability to make a decision. You're being force-fed a decision, right? But if you have free speech, you get to hear counter sides of the conversation. And that's kind of, you know, why these things, like this is why our forefathers put it in our Constitution. They're like, bro, if we don't have this, we are going to end up like the country we just escaped, right? And that's what you see around the world. That's what you see in places. I mean, come on, man. Like anybody that has looked at China at all, if you understand their political system for even 2 milliseconds, you'd be like, yeah, I don't want to live in that. but yet people are sitting there acting as though like what the social media, you know, gods are doing now by stifling. Like for instance, Instagram right now, I mean, just a fucking nonsense. It's an election year. So obviously I get stifled on Instagram, right? Just because I'm friends with conservative influencers or I like or comment on something that's Christian based, all of a sudden I'm getting shut down on Instagram and I can see it. And I watched it happen in 2020 and I'm watching it happen again in 2024. And it's like, that's not a coincidence, guys. Like, and to stifle free speech through those things, like you're going to end up like a country like China where guess what? Even their own party people, if they step out of line, they go and disappear. Like that's what people don't realize. You want something until it affects you. And then you're like, oh shit, like this isn't beneficial for me either.
Dude, not just other countries. I mean, with the Twitter files, the government was literally telling Twitter which accounts to shut down and why, just for having political opinions, right? And when you look at what's happening to Trump, like him or not, I mean, talk about stifling a political candidate. I mean, yeah. they're trying to bury him through the court system over, you know, you have, who's the guy on Shark Tank who went on and they asked his opinion. He's in real estate about.
Oh, was it O'Leary?
Yes. And they're like, well, tell us about what this case is about. And he's like, every single person in real estate who's a developer is looking at this and saying, I'm not safe because everybody tries to inflate the value of their properties for financing and for leverage out in the marketplace. That the economy we're just talking about, that's how you maximize the ability to refinance, pull cash out. Yeah, if your house is worth $1 million and you want to pull 70% out, you pull $700,000 out. Well, if you can prove that your house is worth $2 million, now you're pulling 1.6 out or whatever. So yes, you want your properties and you're going to try to get the highest value for your property as possible. And they're trying to bury him for that, which is a common practice that everybody does with no victim. The bank even said, we were happy to do business with it. We were happy with the deal. No one was hurt. And they're still trying to prosecute him. A victimless crime. So when you're looking at something that is absolutely insane as far as burying your political opponents, and you're not able as a citizen to speak out against that because people are stifling your free speech of like, hey, this is wrong and here are the reasons why it's wrong. It's a dangerous thing.
But it's not even, this is the one thing that kills me, is that in particular is not even a crime, right? Because the bank agreed to the value. The bank doesn't just be like, okay, Elliot says his building's worth $1 million. Okay, Elliot, here's $1 million. They don't do that. They have to confirm and accept. You know, that's the whole point of a contract. I wrote contracts for a decade for the federal government. Like there's an acceptance part of this where we agree on that part, the terms of that contract, and therefore there's nothing illegal about it. You know, they are, unless the person was drunk and in a state in which they were not consciously able to make a sound decision, unless they were in that state, that is a fully legal contract and they accepted whatever the worth was or whatever was told to them. It's not a crime. So it's not even a crime that he's even being questioned on when you think about that. And not only that, but yes, it is a common practice in the industry and was paid back in full faster than the terms of the loan and all of that. Anyway, that is just insanity. But you're right. Like, this is where we sit in today's. And I think a lot of this is part of like the inability of men to stand the fuck up. And I don't put, like, women can stand up too, right? But when we look at society and we look at the trajectory of society, men have been the force in which change was made, right? Always. And there's just this inability, like there wasn't enough strong men standing up during the pandemic, especially in Congress, that were saying, hey, government, no, we're not going to do this. We're going to make a big stink about this if you keep going this way. And we're going to be very vehemently against you. Like, you didn't see enough of that, right? That in and of itself is, I think, why we are where we are as well in this like censorship of free speech, in this kind of abuse of our entire economic system, you know, and our judicial system. Like, this is just insanity.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And you know, it takes courage and strength to go against the grain, and it takes a centered masculinity to not sound crazy and get emotional and scream and yell and lose, you know, respect or momentum in getting your point across. So it takes somebody who's logical and quiet and shows respect to people who differ, but still have their points and still able to speak out articulately and stand your ground and win with logic. Because what will happen was, a dangerous thing that's happening too is somebody who's, you know, standing their ground and saying logical points as a man and being, you know, doing all the right things. And somebody is sitting across the way screaming racist and trying to cancel them and successful with it. So what you're seeing is emotional responses that are just inflammatory and completely illogical, but gaining momentum on social media and people chiming in, and all of a sudden your account shut down and you're blocked from having conversations and sharing posts and communicating your thoughts. There are strong men speaking up, but I think the tide has turned there. I think the emotional response is kind of like worn out a little bit. But, you know, there was that time when BLM was at its peak and you're trying to speak up and support the police or whatever, and you're being canceled for being racist when you have logical points with data driven, you know, hey, there's only 1,000 deaths per year for police every year. And this percentage is, you know, this, like, are they really out like hunting people of color? You know, the answer is clearly no, statistically speaking, but you share that and you're canceled. So, you know, I think there is a lot of strong men speaking up, and I think the emotional response, and the only way to really speak up these days is through social media. I mean, you can't get your messaging out to a lot of people. That's how we communicate. That's how the society communicates now. So to limit that is really limiting someone's voice for free speech, in my belief. Oh, so, 100%. I just feel like you said, like, it does take something. And I think that the tide has turned. I think a lot of people aren't afraid of the emotional backlash of being logical. And I think people learned and grew through how to handle like really divisive fear-based messaging, which, you know, fear causes chaos and a fight or flight response. And for men, you know, there was issues that I got emotional and was angry and was being loud and not having an authentic, true voice, that I had to learn, oh, wow, like I was actually having an emotional response and not like an aligned masculine energy. I was like screaming and being mean and angry, which greatly hurt the voice I had and the impact I was making for what I believed in. So I think when you're looking at growth for men, I think it's coming a long way. And I think for me anyway, like I've learned that my aligned voice is one of like a quiet strength that shows respect, that hears other people's opinions, that can share logically like my thoughts and, you know, the perspectives I have, and be willing to like, okay, maybe I missed the mark on that one. You're right. But here's how I think, and here's, you know, my perspective, and gain mutual respect and growth towards a common goal of the truth and what's actually happening and what's, you know, what's being used and propagandized for money and for fear and divisiveness, and what's actually going on, and getting people closer to the center of, okay, I guess I'll read the whole article and realize, oh, that guy, you know, there's a shooting the other day that was like a guy got pulled over for a seatbelt infraction, and he ended up shooting at the police 11 times and the police shot him 76 times, and everyone was screaming that. And they show, you know, the article didn't tell anything about him shooting him till the last freaking paragraph of the suspect shooting at the police 11 times. Yep. And they have this picture of him graduating high school with his mom. And, just for an emotional response of the police are bad and they shot him 76 times. Well, one cop didn't shoot him 76 times. Eight people shot him six times trying to eliminate a threat, which, you know, once like a situation involves, there's no rules. Like you shoot to kill and you want to put the suspect down until he's no longer a threat. So if there's eight people shooting 10 times, that's 80 rounds. And that is perfectly fine. So it's just interesting that, you know, it takes somebody to stay calm and look for the information and be able to speak logically about stuff that's going on to influence people towards the truth. And I think that's, as you said, I think it takes a very strong and balanced masculine energy to show respect, love, light, even when you're talking about dark subjects, because your intent is not to belittle and shame the other person, is to get closer to the truth. And, you know, some people won't be able to see it, but a lot of people will. And I think that it's really important to just share that message from a place of love and not anger.
Yeah. And that's, and it's hard to do because we have so many people just so irrational these days that they are trying to get you to emotionally respond because they don't have facts that support them. So they're operating from an emotional state, an irrationally emotional state. And then you're trying to present a truthful and concise argument that you're not getting emotional, but they're trying to stir you up because of the fact that they know that they don't have any answers for your questions. And that's what I see a lot of. And I guess I shouldn't have said strong men aren't standing. I do see strong men countering the narrative. But what I meant, I guess, more or less was like prominent strong men. There's not a lot standing up that are countering, like, you know, that are actually going out and countering all the stuff, regardless of whether they're political or not, but like countering a lot of the nonsense and the irrationality that's going on right now in society. But you're right. Like it's our job. And I've talked about this before on the show, but it's our job to realize where the battlefield really is. The battlefield no longer is men going and running at each other with swords and horses and axes. The battlefield is the, you know, intellectual arena. And men have to get with the times. Like men, strong men have to get educated and have to be able to be high levels of intellect so we can actually go and combat these people and make them look like fools on the new battleground, which is remaining calm, having these conversations, not getting into an emotionally charged argument, and having and presenting facts and having them answer questions that they don't have answers for because they either haven't done the research or they're very blind to it because they're very myopic. But that's perfectly said, brother. I love that.
Yeah. And just to piggyback on what you're saying is like a true masculine energy is grounding. And it has roots and it's stable for people. And if you're a strong leader with true masculine energy and you're, you know, and you're having a conversation with somebody and you're grounded and your strength through respect and logical points, people will gravitate to you and people will understand like, oh, that guy's making a lot more sense. He's more stable. He's grounding. I would follow that guy. Just like a good general or good, you know, you've seen it in war, like, in action, like people who are grounded and strengthful through roots and disciplined and have that respect from their team of showing up with their head on their shoulders during tough times, like those are people follow. And it takes a strength and a really aligned masculine to have those attributes. And that's why you're such a great leader is, you know, you're so poised and you do have that strength and you could run into battle with an axe. Like you are a capable freaking man, but you're also extremely intelligent and you're grounded. And it's easy to follow a man like you because of your quiet strength, not just your physical presence, but your intellectual and emotional intelligence. It takes something for people to have that. And that's I think, the key to really having influence and persuading people and enrolling people in your side. And I think, like you said, prominent men are just not doing that for whatever reason. Yeah. A lot of them, and it's probably financial. It's like, they don't want to get canceled. They don't want their business to slow down. There's a lot of things to lose when you go against the grain. So it takes a grounded energy of really believing in what you're doing and, you know, thinking, zooming out and having a big picture of what's really important for you, your kids, the next generation, and speaking up for beliefs that you truly believe in.
Yeah, man. I look at like Jordan Peterson and Ian Smith are kind of two different sides of the coin, right? Like, do I support a lot of what Ian sees because I think he's actually seen through the veil? 100%. Does he say it in a way that drives a lot of contention and people not wanting to follow him? Yes, he does. It's not like he does not present himself very well. And I know a lot of that is all intentional because he's just like, I don't give a shit. But on the same token, like you said, that's not getting the people to follow you who need to hear what you need to say or what you are saying, because what you are saying is true, but they're not going to get to listen to it because you're not able to reach them. They just block it. They block it because of the way you're presenting it. And then vice versa, you have this high level intellect in Jordan Peterson, where it's like, good luck going to battle this guy in a chair sitting across from you on a podcast or on a TV show. He's going to run circles around you, and he's going to do it not only intellectually, but he's going to do it with facts, and he's going to get a lot of people to support his position. And people want to follow that because, again, it's the new battleground. And especially for men, it's the new battleground. Like, I think, you know, Jordan Peterson said it very well, when men need to be dangerous, but we also need to be like highly intellectual. We need to be dangerous on the microphone too. We need to be able to be dangerous not only through our intelligence, but also physically. I firmly believe in both, but it's gotten far more important now that we need to have our wits about us to be able to combat what's going on. Because we're, I mean, quite frankly, we're getting our asses kicked. You see it in the media, and you see the persuasion and the manipulation that the media's had on the generation younger than us, right? And you're looking at them, and these clowns are wanting communism and socialism. And you're like, bro, what? Like, have you read a book? Like, one book on this stuff? It's not good, man. It's not good for anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it's just a fear. It's a fear base that, you know, fear causes a dysregulated nervous system. And when you have a dysregulated nervous system, you can't think clearly. You're easily manipulated. It's easy to follow, you know, these ideas that don't make sense because you're not in a sound, energetic space of making a good decision. And it is energy, and masculine energy is energetic. And you can tell when somebody is being driven by ego, like Ian Smith, right? You can tell, like, this is not a centered person. It's a dysregulated person who's angry and upset and wants to rile people up in a way and be controversial. And that's a shtick. And that's the same shtick that the other side's doing. So, and when you meet someone like John F. Kennedy or somebody really poised at speaking, even Obama, I don't agree with what he says, but dude was a poised, centered, he's a phenomenal energetic speaker. Person.
Yeah.
And like you said, Jordan Peterson, I agree with almost everything Jordan Peterson says, and the way he communicates, and you can feel the energetic groundedness of who he is and how stable he is. And when you hear him argue somebody or talk up to somebody who's a maniac, it's like you just feel the difference of ego versus aligned energetic space. And man, it takes something to work on your energetic space and to be emotionally competent in the face of a heated conversation. And I think it's really important for men these days to have that grounded, energetic, aligned space to control your nervous system, to remain calm, to think clearly. Like you said, you're in battle. You want to perform optimally, and you can't perform optimally when your nervous system's out of whack and you're emotional and you're pissed. I can't. I know that's not my true peak performance. So I think that's the work to be done for me, is like, just how do I emotionally and energetically come across as put together and aligned and with it and thoughtful. I think you know, it's a fun skill to develop.
Oh, it is, but it takes work, and guys have to realize, like, you basically got to take yourself back to school. And it doesn't mean you have to go back to classes, not what I'm saying, but you got to start buying books, you got to start reading books, you got to start paying attention to articles, you got to start critically thinking and deciphering information from both sides of the fence, and like really start to educate yourself on these things so you can have the knowledge base to allow the emotions to subside and have an intellectual conversation. But you got to arm yourself first with the tools, which is the knowledge on what the hell you're even talking about. And when you do that, then you can start to work on that. Okay, how do I center myself in this conversation? What they're saying right now is a little inflammatory, and I do feel myself getting a little emotionally charged. But guess what? I also got a lot of knowledge. So give me a second. Let me tap into that first and then respond back. And that's where I think guys just like have to focus. But you got to get into the self, you got to get into your independent education, man. This is why it's so sad that we see, you know, the self-development world. And I get so tired calling it that, because it's such a, in a lot of ways, I think this industry has become very fraudulent. But in the self-development, just mindset, let's say that, far fewer men are involved in it than women. And women are trying to expand themselves and learn all these different things and self-educate. And men are just sitting back and trying to be like, nope, I am where I am. And that's it. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. And I think that is also part of that kind of hindrance to us growing and evolving as a community of men, so that all of the strong men, not just the prominent ones, but all of them can feel good about getting on the new battlefield, the real battlefield that we're all dealing with today. So I think that's to your point, man, that's where we all have to be. And I still try to work on that every single day. It's an effort, and it's a conscious, intentional effort every single day.
Dude, amen, brother. And that's going to spill over into all areas of life, performance in work, performance in your, relationships, yeah. Performance in your friendships. And it's like demanding versus commanding. It's if you're trying to demand respect and your thoughts, it causes chaos, it causes division, it pushes people away. Whereas like if you're commanding, if you're aligned and people are being drawn to you energetically because you know what you're talking about, you're level-headed, you treat people with respect, like people are going to gravitate to you, and you're going to get new clients, you're going to get better partners at work, you're going to get promoted, you're going to freaking, your business is going to expand, you're going to meet new people, they're going to be drawn. Like it takes work to improve and to broaden your horizons, perspectives, and your community and who you're friends with. And it takes leveling up, and it never ends. And that's, that's the journey. And that's the fun part of like, hey, if you can enjoy the journey of that, you're a million steps ahead of somebody else who's just trying to achieve a result.
Yeah. Well, I think for guys too, that means to up-level your friends, because like when you're sitting in just the same social circle and those guys aren't doing those things that are going to put you in this new arena that we're in this evolved society that we've grown into, you're going to just continually do the same things. That's why I love like having you as one of my good friends. It's like you knew stuff about investing. You knew some things about real estate, but you didn't know what you know now. Like you took on a whole new beast that you had to learn and you had to get savvy about. Not only because, and this was another thing that I loved about what you did, but it also, the reason I'm saying this, because it set the bar for me. It's like, because you and I were both working, W-2s. And then you got out before I did because you're like, I'm taking this on, this business stuff on. Like I'm going head first into it. I was like, okay, Elliot's getting on this. Like I got to step up my game too, right? But you went head first and you had, some people who said they would support all along the way, and those people kind of fell off and didn't give you that. And then you had to learn. But you didn't stop. Like that was what was super cool. You didn't stop. Like Elliot was just like, all right, man, like, well, fuck, I got to learn something else, but I'll just keep doing it, I guess. Like, and I think that's where a lot of people, like you got to up-level your friends to people like this, like Elliot, who don't stop on those new things, who challenge themselves. But then you also have to recognize that when somebody doesn't show up for you or something doesn't happen the way that you want it, that you just got to keep going through it. You got to be persistent. You can't give up. And I think a lot of guys do. They just give up, man.
Yeah. Man, and I guess I'm just too dumb to quit sometimes, but like, I truly believe that, if you just stay in the game and stay in the fight, you're going to eventually win. And, it's not how hard you can hit, it's how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward, right? Like, I love that line, and I try to live by that line because it's not always rainbows and unicorns. Like, how it is when you're in a business and you're learning and you're starting and you're growing and you're diving in and it's tough and you feel like a failure and you feel like you're not enough and you don't know how it's going to happen. Like those feelings come up as natural. It's human emotions. And it can humble you. It doesn't matter how confident you are. It doesn't matter how successful you've been at something else. When you start something new, it takes something to keep on going and to try to become an expert and surround yourself with people who are better than you. And it takes something to be like, I'm not the smartest guy in this. I'm actually the dumbest guy in this, but I'm going to keep learning and keep growing and keep moving forward. That takes something, man. And dude, your consistency and your drive and your execution is something that inspires me, man. Like you never miss. You never give up. You never take a day off. Like you always show up and put in the work in all your areas in life. And that is remarkable, dude. That's a remarkable trait to have. And I know that's what's going to drive your success. Our stories aren't overnight successes. Our stories are,
no.
We keep moving forward until we freaking make it, and to see everything that you've achieved so far and to know like what your qualities as a man is going to take you. Like it's so fun to be your friend and to be a part of it and to draw inspiration from what you're doing too, man. It's great. And to your point, surrounding yourself with people who are up to that is intimidating, but also completely necessary if you want to up level yourself.
Yeah, man. I mean, I appreciate that, brother. It means a lot, but that is exactly, you know, my drive. Like, you know, we both have our mutual friend, Chris, who you're really close with. And then, you know, I've known Chris for years, but Chris is a huge motivator for me. I see him. I see the heart-centered way that he lives, who he is as a human, but also what he's done to get where he is. And that was like, I'm like, dude, that's what I want. And Chris he's been persistent and Chris is focused. And, you know, it's not been all roses and sunshine for him either, but he's very honest about that. And then it's like, but you can always get there. And when you have people like that in your life that you can look up to and be like, okay, like, there is no day that you want to slack off. You're like, no, I can't get there if I'm going to be slacking off, or I can't get there if I'm going to quit on everything I do just because it doesn't turn out in the time that I thought it would, right? Like, I can't do that, right? So it's great, man. I think guys just really need to take more stock in the quality of people that are in their lives, not just for their emotional support, but people who make them truly want to up level. Like, and for all the guys out there, if you're talking shit on a guy in your life who is doing better than you, it's because you're jealous. It's because you're envious of where he's at. And that means that you need to take a look inside and say, well, how do I actually show that guy a lot of love? Because that's the guy I want to follow in his footsteps, or at least have my own version of what he's doing, right? So it's a cool thing, man. Actually, Chris is the impetus. You can tell him this too, but he's the impetus for me that, you know, like we just talked about how social media is just kind of a ball of fuckery these days, right? And I'm like, dude, I want to get into product-based businesses because I don't want to rely on social media anymore. I don't. I just really don't. It terrifies me. It terrifies me how they've censored people. And I was like, I want to get into products. And like, that's where I want to move for the next, you know, few years and really start to build business that way. I still do like the coaching stuff because I love it. I really love helping men and women kind of find their way and have their happiest life. But dude, for me, it's like, I look at what they're doing with the new product. What was that?
Glossy.
What's the new? Yeah. Glossy. Is that what it is? Yeah. Glossy. Yeah. So Glossy, yeah. Right. I love what they're doing with that, but they've dove into a lot of things. And that's been for me, again, he's a person that up levels me every time I see him. So I look at him and I'm like, oh, how could I create my own version of that? Right. And it's just a cool thing to have in your life as a man, to know that you have people that, you know, are setting the bar and constantly raising it, because that's where you should be too. If you really want the happiness in life that you desire and that you we all deserve, you got to have people that are doing it as well in your circle to be like, okay, I can see it. I know what it looks like.
Sometimes you just got to keep it simple. It's like, hey, what do I really want in life? Okay, I want these things. Okay, who's good and doing those things on a consistent basis that I want to learn from and be a part of? Oh, that guy, or, you know, and you can have 100 different mentors in 100 different areas and, you know, to find someone who's really great at a product-based business and follow him and listen to his podcast and learn from him. Yep. And, oh, I want to find someone who's like centered masculine energy, who I want to like be a strong man. Oh, Johnny, like I'm going to listen to him and follow him and go to his events that he hosts and be around other people who are driving that same direction. Like your Kodiak trip, dude. I mean, being in a space where you have, you know, 10, 15 guys all trying to achieve the same thing, moving in the same direction, will put you light years ahead of where you want to be if that's the area you're trying to grow in. And it's so important to invest in that and to get into rooms like that if you're trying to network with high value men who are up to something. Because guess what? The guy in that room who's working on himself and becoming something better is the guy who's going to own a $100 million business down the road, and who can invest with you and who can help you achieve the things you want to achieve down the road. And so it's a long-term investment of relationship capital, of getting in rooms and spaces with high-achieving men. And the groups that you're putting together there's no better place, dude. The event that you held changed my freaking life, dude. When I went out to Corpus Christi and shotguns from a helicopter and was around, you know, really strong men who were up to stuff like that, that changed the trajectory of my life, dude. So like, I can't tell people enough, like getting in rooms with leaders and really strong men and who are putting this together for you. for you on a freaking platter. I just showed up, had a great time, and made relationships with people who changed my life, man. Like, I don't know how much easier it can get than that. I mean, yes, I had to go and put in the work and invest and show up with a good attitude and shake people's hands and smile and provide energetic space for people and show them who I really was. Like, that's the work. But that's a lot easier than trying to freaking find 15 people who are up to the same things you are. So yeah. I just, dude, for what you're doing and the impact you're making in the world and for men, like, it is incredible. And it's an absolute no-brainer to be a part and invest in the trips and the spaces that you're creating.
I appreciate that, brother. Dude, if you were in Alaska with us, we wouldn't have to carry bear spray on us. The bears would just run away from you. We'd be like, oh, this is a big old polar bear coming in. Screw this, dude. The Kodiak bear's like, fuck that, I'm out.
Yeah, I was planning on not showering for a week just to make sure the scent would like keep them away, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, man, makes sense. I like it. Oh, dude, this has been so fun, man. I love jamming out with you. You and I could talk for hours. Just so special to have you on number 400 here on the Art of Masculinity. And you've already said, you know, what the Art of Masculinity means to you. So I'm going to ask you a different question. So for those of you that don't know Elliot, he's a big basketball fan. So who is the most epic traveler in the NBA history?
Dude, absolutely LeBron James, hands down. That video you sent me was hilarious, where he ran from like half court to a layup and no one said anything. Like, what in the heck is going on, dude?
Bro. Oh my God.
I see NBA. Those videos. It's so ridiculous.
Oh, I'm not even that big of like a basketball fan, but I love these videos because to me, it's, I mean, I know traveling and it's hilarious to watch all of the traveling videos of LeBron James. Like, this bro runs, like, he'll run like the full, like, you know, half circle around the 3-point line, not even dribbling the ball once and no ref calls him. It's hilarious, dude. Oh my God.
You want some funny videos? You just YouTube LeBron James traveling and LeBron James flopping and you will laugh your butt off, dude. It is so funny.
Oh my God. So good. It's so good. Well, brother, let everybody know real quick, because it's higher investments, but I know that you are looking still for some investors for your high-end Airbnb business. So talk a little bit about that real quick, and then let people know how they can potentially get more information on this if it's something that they're looking into.
Yeah, I'm building a retreat space, a 7-bed, 9-bath, you know, sauna, gym, intentional space to host retreats for corporate events, for small businesses, for retreats, for masterminds, for anybody who wants to host an intentional space of humans. And it's going to be right here in Arcadia, which is right by Paradise Valley in Scottsdale, right by Camelback Mountain, beautiful spot. And you know, if you're looking for a tax deduction and an investment opportunity, you know, you can be partners in this. And I've done a lot of research. I've not just myself, I've talked to experts in the area. I've carefully vetted this deal. I think it's going to be very profitable. And, you know, I have an opportunity for someone to invest if you're looking for that. So my company is called Vacation Equity Group. My Instagram is Elliot R. Schwartz on Instagram, or you can email me at Elliot@vacationequitygroup.com if you want information, if you want the deck, you want to see what we're up to and the intentional, you know, space that we're putting together for people to host retreats. And if you host masterminds, it's a great way to be a part and get a return on your money of a space that you'd be investing in anyway to host retreats. So it's kind of a no-brainer for people in that space. And that's really why I created it. It's like, for an average investor to invest in a, you know, a $7 million home, it's really hard. I couldn't buy a $7 million home right now. It's ridiculous. So the thought is that, you know, to pull a bunch of investors together and give everyone, you know, the return that they're seeking in one of the, you know, in the luxury space, I believe is one of the best performing spaces from all the research I've done and the property managers I've talked to. So it's a way to invest that money and get a better return in a space that's really hard to get into from a capital barrier entry point. So pulling together funds and coming in together as a community to invest in a space like this is really exciting and fun. And I think it's giving people access to an asset class that you can't do on your own. So if you want to sit back and let me do all the hard work and have access to a freaking dope spot, they would hit me up. I would love to talk to you and share some more information.
Bro, that's what I'm all about. I don't want to do any of the work for real estate stuff. I want someone else to just do it, man. Oh, I've done some real estate investing and it's not like that hard. That to me is a huge selling point that you guys are running point on everything and I just get to sit back and collect. And I agree with you that like it's a big industry and it's one that you and I are very much involved in. And once this is up and running, like I think you're onto something here, brother. And I know a lot of people who will be using it. And I know I will be using it for all my guys out there. We're going to host something down there in Arizona at this place. And we're going to do a mastermind down there for some high-end entrepreneurs. And when we get this thing all set, man, we're definitely going to be utilizing that space because I've seen it and it's going to be dope. But
let's rock and roll.
Thank you, brother. Yeah.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. What an honor, dude.
Yeah, it's amazing, man. And everybody listening, make sure you guys check out Elliot. Go get on his email. You guys have an email list, right, bro?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Get on his email list. Yeah. You do, right? Like you guys have...
No.
Yeah, okay.
I don't have...
You don't?
No.
Okay. Shoot him an email so you can get their stuff because you'll want to know what's going on. And then if you are interested in it or you do become invested in it, there's obviously more opportunities down the road as Elliot grows the business. So, all right, homie, I appreciate you, brother. And to everybody listening, as always, remember that the world deserves a better caliber of man and it's our obligation to give it to him.